Welcome to Compassion Radio. Good morning, and welcome to another all-new Compassion Radio. Well, it's the fifth day of Christmas today, and for millions of Christians around the world, that means a day of remembrance and thanks for all the saints who have gone before us. One tradition commemorates the courage of St. Thomas Becket, martyred for daring to challenge the king's sovereignty over the kingdom of God. It happened in the Roman Empire. It happens even today, as thousands every year are martyred for much the same reason. Understand that it is no small thing to stand up and say, I belong to a new king. Yet that is what we do when we pledge allegiance to Christ first and above all. Take a moment to consider that today as we begin. And say a prayer for those who even now are paying the price for their surrender to a living Christ. Yesterday we began an important conversation with Ethan Morse, a soldier, esteemed member of our nation's highest honor guard, a documentarian, and a committed Christ follower. Where that commitment led him is a fascinating story in itself, and we'll continue that today. Something to keep in mind as you listen. There are no steps down in God's plan, but that path to greater service and satisfaction in the kingdom does not always take us on what seems like an upward trajectory. Thanks for joining us today. We're back with part two of a conversation with Ethan Morse, and we're talking about his history, but not just his. It's the history of our nation, and he's talking about the deeper things, the history of the kingdom around the world, because they have to respond to the things he's talked about in his documentaries. Ethan, welcome back to Compassion Radio.
Hey, thank you again for having me today. It's a pleasure to be back.
We met because you had a history, one that was hanging on the wall inside of a very sacred place underneath the Tomb of the Unknown Soldiers, and your number is what?
Badge 548.
Badge 548 of the Honor Guard there at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. Ethan had the honor and the privilege of being able to walk those steps a zillion times on behalf of us to honor those who have fallen for our nation. But it's also an honor rooted in his faith. And he went forward with that knowledge and that experience and made hay of the day by finding ways to tell the stories that had never really been explored in the way you did it. And the unknowns was that first opening of the vessel, looking behind and into the soul of America. And now your series that you've just completed and have released is called
Honor Guard. That just came out on Apple, Amazon, and Google Play. And that was narrated by Sam Elliott. That's a four-part series, actually, about different specialty platoons at Arlington National Cemetery.
So, of course, we're trying to chase you all to go see these documentaries because Ethan's done a marvelous job with his partner in crime. It is also, as we talked about in the last program, wonderful because it encapsulates something that people, they have a need to pour out from their souls, and they don't always feel like they've got a place to put their stories. You've done that for so many. And along the way, as you mentioned yesterday, have found the stories of many faithful believers like you that found their way to this kind of service and this kind of sacrifice. You saw the fruit in their lives that I want to tell their story, and their story needed to be told. So when you see this series, you're seeing a lot of stories of faithful, God-fearing people, even if it's couched in just kind of a generic language about faith and honor. It's obvious to me those things would happen. You would find people of the faith because you see the fruit in their lives, and that's the kind of fruit that you want to see become indicative of the kind of people we are as much as just the persons. But tell me, what is it like when you really don't have a way to pour out your grief or your sorrow and be able to put on the altar, so to speak, the things that have wounded us? What becomes of that? Because I remember looking back at the beginning of the Afghan conflict, the makeshift memorials that started showing up in these forward base stations when they would lose somebody they couldn't commemorate or couldn't get back to have a service for because they were stuck on station. The boots would show up, a gun would be placed next to it, flowers or things would be put into those boots and dog tags draped over that. They became emblematic of loss because you would see the boots that would never march because that person would never be there again. That was the kind of memorial that I recall coming out of Iraq, but mostly out of Afghanistan. That picture is embedded in my mind now after all these years. How did these memorials evolve? And what have you seen during your documentary making about how we commemorate those we've lost? And Ethan, the reason I'm asking that is because I know that it's going to come close to our hearts because of the COVID experience the past couple of years. We'll get to that next. But I want to get to the heart of the American soldier, too, because you know that heart. You are that heart.
Yep.
How do these memorials evolve, and what do they really mean for those who are doing them?
I hear all the time, you know, thank you for your service. And a lot of my friends instantly say, oh, you know, it's our pleasure. Oh, we're not doing it for the thanks. But the reality is, in the Bibles, Paul talks a lot about the Roman soldiers. And when you think about it, a soldier's life is not good. You know, and during Paul's time, it was so bad that by law, they could just order anybody to carry their bag for a mile. You know, and it's because their bag was heavy. And they're this, you know, the fighting force of Rome. And they would say, hey, carry my bag. And then I think it was Paul, you can correct me if I'm wrong, who says, look, don't even carry it for 1 mile, carry it for 2 miles. Go above and beyond.
Yeah, I think Jesus gets credit for that one. Reiterated a number of times.
Jesus uses that example because, A, the Roman Empire was the strongest military force on earth, and they were obviously abusing their power to the Jews. But beyond literally saying, hey, we need your help, there's oftentimes a pointing to the soldiers. Hey, be like soldiers and fight the good fight. Be like soldiers, put on the full armor of God. And it is a thankless job, even though it's easy to say thank you. It's a thankless job where you get sent places where you maybe never wanted to be sent. Afghanistan, Iraq, doesn't matter kind of where, because it's never convenient. You know, it's never like, it's time for vacation. I've been sent around now the country for different things, and it wasn't convenient for me. It hasn't been easy for my wife. And I think that's then where you start realizing the fallen memorials, why they spring up, World War I, II, Korea, Vietnam, when so many people are being killed overseas, and you can't really go visit where they fell. Maybe their body is brought home, but I think there becomes a longing in people's hearts to have a memorial that they can visit in their community, a war memorial at the local veterans park. So many communities have a veterans park. And as our nation grows and the service shrinks, it's about less than 1% of America has served in the military. I think the void becomes more. It's like, oh, why do we have a veterans park in every freaking town? And we forget why. And that then leads to the admonition, don't tear down ancient landmarks of your fathers. Don't forget the past. And I think we're coming into this weird time where we do tear down memorials, monuments, different statues, because maybe we don't agree with them now. And I think that that's a danger. We really should be aware of just why we have our freedom.
I don't mind tackling that head on right with you, Ethan, because what you're talking about is probably a lot of the Southern memorials to Confederate generals and politicians that are really truly part of the history, yet are a new wound in the side of those who are still oppressed. And there is genuine hatred that's reemerging in this generation that is costing lives. And those who are oppressed by that, I think, rightfully fight back. But I don't want to lose our awareness of why people fought the way they did, because I want to learn from history, too. I also want to love my neighbor. So I think those things are going to live in dynamic tension, and they should, especially for the believer. I think we should be very cautious about venerating anything we don't know or sticking by a history or a tradition simply because we've had it and forget those we love right near us.
Yep. You know, what's crazy is I and my wife, about 10 years ago, lived in Huntington Beach, California. And I had no clue that it has one of the largest KKK neo-Nazi community in the country, in the whole country. And I didn't know that. My wife's Asian. She would come home sometimes in tears. Some guy, some bubba in a big old truck tried to run her off the road. And I told her, well, I mean, you do drive really slow, honey. You know, I'm sure I was not racist, you know. And I never really believed her. As I drive around with my military haircut, getting thumbs up from other guys and thinking, yeah, this is great. I then realized, and I was told by a friend, and it was like a year after we moved out of there, that I realized, oh my goodness, she was experiencing racism, you know, actual racism, my own wife. And I mean, I love her more than anybody in this world, didn't even hear it. And that's caused me to, when we talk about the issues of race that you'd mentioned, that really just made me kind of realize that I have no clue of what other people are experiencing.
Now, Ethan, you've touched on, I think, the best functional definition of systemic racism. Because when people hear that term, they think, oh, the government's against me, they're persecuting me, they're going after me, whatever. And people react to that and say, it's not that bad. Well, it might be for some. But the point of the definition of systemic racism is simply that racism is hiding in the system. And when you go through your day in Newport Beach, California,
yep.
and you can't comprehend what your wife's fears mean or how they're connected to reality, in your own family, and it takes you time before you step out of that context to look back on it and say, this was really happening to my wife. And there probably is an element of shame that comes into that, saying, I didn't realize yep. her need for my protection or my help or my encouragement or my at least my belief that what she's telling me is true.
Yep.
That's what I think really is the problem with the idea of systemic racism. It is a problem within relationships because we can't empathize with those who are being affected. For 78 years now, we've depended on the faithful encouragement of friends just like you to bring this unique radio and media ministry to the air each day. You can drop us a line, ask a question, submit a prayer request, or download a free Bible study guide in just the same way. It all happens at CompassionRadio.com. Remember, this is a 100% listener-supported ministry. If you've never supported us before, would you consider doing so this month? I know many of you can and want to give more, so I'll not be shy in asking for that support. Thank you for seriously considering this request and challenge. Our toll-free order line is 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. If you need to call early or late, that's okay. Just make sure to leave your name and phone number, and we'll get back to you immediately when the doors open each business day. You can also give anytime online at CompassionRadio.com. And if you prefer to put a stamp on it, you can always find us at Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Thank you, friends, for stretching your faith as we close this year and as we begin a new year of opportunity in 2022. I sincerely hope we can continue to be a real encouragement to you now and in the days to come. And again, friends, thank you so much for making it possible. And now back to my interview with Ethan Morse, author, filmmaker, and one of those rare breeds who actually served at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. When you go through your day in Newport Beach, California, and you can't comprehend what your wife's fears mean or how they're connected to reality, in your own family, and it takes you time before you step out of that context to look back on it and say, this was really happening to my wife. And there probably is an element of shame that comes into that, saying, I didn't realize her need for my protection or my help or my encouragement or my at least my belief that what she's telling me is true.
Yep.
That's what I think really is the problem with the idea of systemic racism. It is a problem within relationships because we can't empathize with those who are being affected.
Yep. And it's so funny because as Christians, we should love our neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And we should empathize with, let's say, if it's the Black Lives Matter community, who I still, come on, that's not racism. Cops kill more white guys than cops kill black guys. You know, and that's what my argument is. As I talk to my military black friends, and they're like, well, but what about X, Y? And they fill in the blanks. And I'm like, huh, never affected me. you know? And they're like, of course, that's what we're saying. And still hard to feel compassion. You know, I'm like, oh, well, you know, I guess maybe your grandfather couldn't get a loan for a house. You know, guess what? I couldn't get a loan either. You know, and they're like, well, that's because you're an artist, Ethan, and you have a lot of debt. You know, and they're like, and it's still hard for us, Ethan, to get a loan. Even today, if we don't have perfect credit, perfect length of job or whatever, that blows my mind. You know, it's like, wow, I'd never thought of that, that even the banks will sit there and make decisions on who they give a loan to off of color.
And we need to acknowledge, I think, within the Christian community that redlining still exists. Again, that's an example of a systemic racism.
Yep.
Not because there's individual intent to harm, but because we just assume so many things. I want to tackle that front on because you are in an environment where the most integrated part of America is going to be the military.
Yep.
And yet some of the strongest elements of white supremacy have also tried to find haven within the military. And there are Christians that flow into this thing from all directions thinking, what do we do with these amazing polar opposites? It's like all of American politics blown to nuclear proportions within the military.
Yeah.
And you see that firsthand. So I just want to make sure I bring attention to that, because I want to acknowledge that you are humble enough to say, I'm going through a metamorphosis here as I understand and follow God where he will lead me to understand his world, his people better. And I'm proud of you for that. We'll start on the next subject here for a short period of time, but then we're going to develop it out on the next program a little more at length. But I want to pivot towards the issue of COVID, because you unexpectedly found yourself on the front lines of this fight. So tell me about just what you've been doing as an officer or as a servant of the nation through the National Guard. You got activated. What's been happening the past year?
Well, I'm going to back up just a little bit, and not out of humbleness, but it's been a rough couple of years, so I want to be very honest. So I ended up not getting commissioned as an officer in the National Guard. I spent 2 years in that program working very hard, running, like I said, almost until passing out. And my brother encouraged me. He said, look, if God wanted you to pass that program, he could breathe new breath into my lungs.
He could.
And I would have no problem in running.
Then let me hold it right there and reiterate then what we talked about in the previous program. Ethan Morris, the man who's got an identification badge for the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier as guard number 548, you have one of the highest honors that the U.S. military can give an individual for their selfless, persistent, and quality service to our nation. So you already have that title. You went back in there saying, I've got more to do with the military. Circumstances and your pneumonia that you tried to push through literally physically prevented you from doing something as simple as passing your physical exams to be an officer again. So now you're dealing with an ego issue.
Yep.
Where do I go from the heights of military honor to the bottom of the pecking order? And you still want to serve and you believe that God called you to do it.
Yep.
So what happened?
At the beginning of 2020, I ended up being released from the officer candidate program. And it's a very strenuous program. They said, you can come back after 6 months. Well, I was very depressed. All my friends commissioned, you know, in my class.
Yeah.
I helped hold the program at their class. You know, welcome to the commissioning class of all my friends, handing off their programs to the generals and all that stuff. And then finally, in January of 2020, I got released. And then we shut down in March 2020, and then I got activated for the riots as a specialist now. So I'm just an Army specialist. I get activated for the riots, and I realized that as a specialist, I was out protecting courthouses, the community, whereas a lot of the officer friends of mine were back in the headquarters doing paperwork. And I thought, wow, this is weird. I'm actually doing what I love, serving my neighbors in the community as a soldier, not as an officer. So then that kind of made me think, well, maybe this is where I belong, you know, and maybe I don't want to be an officer. Maybe that was excuses too, being very honest.
You're writing a new narrative for yourself.
Yeah. So I stayed there as an enlisted guy. And that led to then January of 2021, my company was notified that 3 soldiers had to be sent to go to the COVID mission. Something in me said, that's probably something I should do.
Nobody knew anything about it at the time. So you're facing a total unknown.
Yep, total unknown. So then I got a phone call from my first sergeant and he said, hey, Morse, we need 3 soldiers to go to the COVID mission. Nobody's volunteered. I can't force you because I could grab this other guy, but do you want it?
Tough call when you got a wife at home.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, man, I don't know. You know, I don't know anything about what's happening. I knew it was for the vaccination mission that was ramping up. Oddly enough, I got activated by President Trump, and then I got paid by President Biden. So I have a very different viewpoint of the vaccine came because of President Trump's greenlighting a lot of wonderful programs through multiple vaccine companies. Yeah. And we have the 3 vaccines that worked. There's a bunch of others that didn't.
And I want to give credit where credit's due, too. Those programs were greenlit, and I am definitely a pro-vaccine person because I've seen it save lives myself.
Yep.
It's not a political statement for me. I'm going to give credit to the Trump administration for greenlighting the programs that actually produce a vaccine, a number of them that actually successfully saved lives. And then, of course, you're on the other end under the orders of another president who so many that were pro-Trump would feel perfectly fine in hating. Even Christians have felt like you can hate a man. No matter what your feelings might be politically towards somebody, an individual, you are still a kingdom servant. So you went out there as a faithful servant to God first. You're serving him and serving under other commanders. And you're going out there to do what?
We showed up and I was so proud that since I'd come back in 2018 under Trump, that I was activated by President Trump. And then one of the first executive orders that President Biden signed January 20th was actually paying us, saying that, yep, this is a good plan. Mm-hmm. So we were assigned to vaccination strike teams. And we were matched up with medics. There'd be like six medics and six non-medics, which I'm an infantry supply guy. So I was then the guy doing the paperwork. We didn't know where we were going to get sent. My team was one of the first ones sent out mid-January. I was in Long Beach, California at the Long Beach Convention Center. We had a drive-through vaccination site that the civilians had set up, and they were doing mostly volunteers. So then we showed up. Literally, with our help, they could easily work 18-hour days. For a while, we were doing 18-hour days, 6 days a week, literally from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. open. But then with the vaccine, very confusing. You have to draw it beforehand. Mm-hmm. It can't stay unfrozen for very long. So we just started vaccinating a couple thousand a day. And then slowly, we grew from 20 lanes to a total of 60 lanes. And 40 of them were drive-through, 20 of them were walk-in up at the main area there. By August, we had vaccinated around 250,000 people. And it was just rinse and repeat. Just do it. Yeah. I don't even really remember 2021. We just worked, you know.
Yeah.
At the end of August, kind of mission successful. Everybody that wanted the vaccine had it. Mm-hmm. It was now available at all drugstores, CVS's, Walmart's, you know, grocery stores. So we were drawn down and we were told we were going to get sent home. Mm-hmm. Well, the numbers were kind of spiking everywhere, especially in California again. So we got stopped from going home and we're sent to medical strike teams. Hmm. So then from August through November, I was on medical strike teams, and that's where they'd send in the medics to hospitals that were overwhelmed at like 110%. And the crews just needed help. The staff, the nurses and doctors needed help. So the medics would be there. And then again, we would be there to help with the paperwork and anything else was needed, or to even just to be their drivers, because they're working then 12-hour days. We would drive them in, drive them out. Crazy to see. And I can't say that I did well. I mean, a deployment, it's funny. You're told, oh, well, at least you're deployed in California.
Yeah.
Well, try being 3 hours from your home and you can't go home for 3 months. Yeah. You know, it's like, hey, wife, at least I'm 3 hours away instead of, you know, 3,000. It doesn't really help.
And she can't probably just drop in and bring you lunch either.
Right. Okay. Not at all. So, but it was an amazing experience.
This story you're telling, Ethan, about the work you've been doing in the National Guard and how God kept bringing you back around to some of the most important work that could possibly be done in this world keeps getting dumped in your lap. I want to cover more about the experience of being a first responder, a strike team kind of person on behalf of the military, helping those find those who were affected by COVID and stopping this latest surge on the Delta variant. But I got to come back on tomorrow's program to get there. So if you'll stick with us here, we'll roll this over and we'll start another program.
I would love to, Bram. I look forward to it.
I hope you'll join us again tomorrow for more from Ethan Morse, documentarian, soldier, Honor Guard member, an all-around wonderful servant of God in the kingdom. Friends, as we wrap up the year 2021, I can say with all seriousness that it has been the most challenging of our 78 years in broadcast ministry. So much is changing in our world today. So much is unpredictable. And frankly, there are plenty of reasons to doubt the future. That is, if our anchor is not on the Rock of Ages. I'm so grateful that we get the opportunity to continue bringing you your good news and inspiration from so many wonderful places and people who make up this worldwide family we call the Kingdom of God. Because of your faithful giving, we've been able to do it. With your continued support, we'll continue. Pretty much every ministry I know makes a special appeal at year-end for renewed financial support. They do it for two reasons, basically. First is because this is already the season of giving, and the church is primed for generosity. From the joy of Christmas and renewed experience of His gift to us, we are much more likely to share with others. The second reason is fairly practical. Givers are hitting the reset button as they prepare for a new year. They maximize their gifts to minimize their income tax. At the same time, most nonprofits are wrapping up their financials and making plans for the next year based on giving right now. Of course, we sincerely hope you'll stand with us all year long, and that if you believe in us and what we do, you'll take the opportunity right now to help us step into 2022 with the resources we'll need to get through the next season. Thank you, friends, so much for standing with us in prayer and giving so that we can be here today and tomorrow. Bless you for all you do, and know that we are deeply grateful for your generosity and faithful giving. You can call us today at 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Or you can send your gift by mail to Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Our website is also available 24/7 to make your gift online through your credit or debit card. However you choose to give, know that we'll make the most of it in finding the stories and ministry partners who are doing unique things for the kingdom in places where most others just don't go. And again, thank you from the bottom of our hearts for being intrepid with us in your ministry giving. May 2022 be an awesome year of spiritual growth and kingdom action for you. Make sure to join us tomorrow for part 3 of my discussion with Ethan Morris on how adventurous Christians like him are making a tremendous impact in the arts, entertainment, and journalism for the kingdom of God. We'll see you then.